Welcome to NetFront Presents. I'm Jeff Gordon of the Post-Dispatch, joined by the beat reporter Matthew DeFranks, and we have got a lot to talk about, so let's jump right to it. Last time we talked about the potential of Torrey Krug not playing this year with his injury, and sure enough, suspicions were confirmed. Doug Armstrong took action loading up his decor this summer, and it became clear why, as Torrey's had to undergo surgery. And from your reporting, it makes it just points out how challenging a comeback even for next season is going to be for Torrey Krug.
Yeah, so the procedure that Krug is undergoing or already has undergone, he went through it on Tuesday. It was called a subtalar fusion, and essentially it involves screws being put into the foot ankle area, and it limits side to side motion of your foot. So with skating, I mean, that's apparent that you need that. And so even with a full recovery, it's going to be tough to have that motion back. What happens is it fuses the bones together. So, really, really tough for Torrey Krug. He was a pretty emotional man when we spoke to him a few weeks ago about the procedure and about him missing the entire season. He explained that it stemmed from, back in his Boston days, I believe 6 years ago, when he was playing in the playoffs against Tampa. He went into the corner in a battle with Alex Killorn, got kind of tripped up, and his foot went right up against the boards, fractured his foot there, and I guess it never really quite fully healed or recovered there. And so he had pre-arthritic changes, pain he was dealing with throughout all of last season. He thought he could manage it and get through like he had previously. But over the summer when he was skating, when he was getting ready for the season, it just didn't seem to be getting better. And what he'd said was, actually playing hockey was one of the easier parts because you put your foot in the skate and it kind of acts like a boot. It protects it. You have support. You have a decent support system there on your foot. And when he was having issues skating this summer, that's when he knew it was kind of a problem. So tried to rehab it, and in the end, had to take the surgical option, and he'll miss the entire season. Yeah.
So that sets up a scenario where the Blues not only have revamped their front lines with plenty of new additions, creating all sorts of opportunity for Drew Bannister to shuffle some things around and look at different things, including Pavel Buchnevich playing center again. But the decor is going to have a much different look with the additions the Blues have made, and with Torrey's subtraction. So we'll talk more about that possible alignment. But before we get to that, I want to get your breakdown of the prospects tournament. It seemed, as Doug Armstrong noted yesterday, the next year's team will have like five number one picks that weren't in this year's team as far as the prospect entry. But still plenty of interesting players for the Blues in this tournament, including some guys that are going to be potential depth forward someday and guys that will make a transition from Europe to North America playing for Springfield.
Yeah, I think when you look at the forwards that played, I think six of them kind of made an impression on me. And you can split them into very easy 3-3 groups. You have the three forwards that we talked about a lot in terms of prospects having a chance to make it to the NHL soon. And that's Bolduc, Dean, and Dvorsky. And Bolduc, I thought, was pretty good throughout the tournament. He was engaged in battles. He was being physical. He was not... His pace of play was a little higher. He was engaged. Like, he had a highlight reel goal on Sunday against Minnesota, but it was more than that. I think on Friday night, his line with Zach Dean and Alexandre Kostomaki was probably the best one on the ice. It generated so many chances. Didn't always convert, but they were there to generate offense for the Blues team on Friday against Chicago. And then Sunday, he came through with a goal where he darts through the middle and then slips the backhand between the Wild goalie's legs. And Sunday was, it got out of hand. I think the Wild put in an 18-year-old goalie who was a fifth round draft pick, and he gave up six goals in half a game. I think it was six goals on 18 shots, so the points got piled up probably in a quicker manner than you would expect normally against the Wild, but still you liked what you saw from Bolduc kind of his overall game. Dean, I thought, was really good on Friday against Chicago. Hit three posts, had two assists, had a puck go off his skate just wide. So you know, a few inches here and there, it would have been a real prolific night for him. Sunday, a little bit of a step back. He had three minor penalties in the second period alone, I believe, and wasn't overall as impactful as he was on Friday. And then, you know, a little bit of the opposite for Dalibor Dvorsky. You know, Friday, you saw him shooting the puck a lot. He had that shot mentality, trying to get the puck off his stick, you know, pretty quickly, honestly. And when you have a release like that, it's quick and it's heavy and it's accurate. You want to get it off as much as possible. But that was really one of the only main parts about his game that stuck out on Friday. And, you know, Sunday, he was setting up teammates. He was creating chances. He was making smart little touch plays. Good things from him on Sunday that we didn't quite see on Friday. And then the other three guys, Koskimaki, Alexander Koskimaki, Simon Robertson, and Dylan Peterson, they all similar-ish games, kind of grinder, dig out pucks, be a little physical, show some speed. They all showed at different points of the tournament. And I honestly thought Simon Robertson was maybe the most consistent and impactful player the Blues had over the two games.
And those guys are going to be potentially someday, you know, a fourth line. You know, these are guys, but certainly getting some high marks for being on the puck and doing what they have to do to play on this side of the pond for the two guys from Europe. And coming out of college, if you're a big power forward without a, you know, big scoring touch, you've got to separate guys from the puck. You've got to play the body. And certainly it seems like got the memo in terms of how he's going to need to play in at Springfield.
Yeah, and Peterson, he's 6'4". He came out of Boston College. And he spent 4 years at BU. He played three games in the AHL last year after BU season ended. And, you know, the Blues liked what they saw from him during that short sample size in Springfield. And this year, he's one of the older guys that came into prospect camp because he did play 4 years of college. You know, these tournaments, you have the 18, 19-year-olds that played in junior hockey. You have, you know, maybe some of the Europeans that played 2-3 years over in Europe come over. And then you have some of the invites that played 4 or 5 years of college hockey, right? But Peterson was one of the older guys at the tournament. And, you know, his size and speed really stuck out. And, you know, in a different way, you look at Koskimaki and Robertson, and they were heavy on forechecks. They were digging pucks out there, showing speed. They were just being hockey players on a more professional level because they've been there. They played professionally in Europe, and they brought a little bit more, I would say, polish to the game.
Now, Dvorsky is a player who, of course, gets all the attention, and Doug Armstrong is doing his obligatory checking of set expectations and really setting up a roster with enough veteran presence that and enough depth where they don't need to push any of these guys, particularly a guy that's got to take a big jump here, dominated in the OHL after not getting much ice time in Sweden. He's going to make it, and we are going to see him this year, I think, at some point, whether it's early or late. But yeah, in terms of trying to establish himself as an NHLer, it's such a big step. And it sounds as if he may have been feeling a little bit of that weight just in the day one of the prospect tournament before he settled in for his second game.
Yeah, that's what Steve Konowalczuk said. So Konowalczuk is the new coach in Springfield, and he coaches the prospects at this tournament. And he kind of mentioned that Dvorsky looked like he was putting too much pressure on himself, trying to maybe do too much, and thought his performance on Friday was just fine. It wasn't good, it wasn't bad. It was just fine. And then, you know, when we speak to Doug Armstrong yesterday, I think the biggest thing that I wanted to know was, how does Dvorsky make Doug Armstrong deviate from his plans, right? Because in the past, Armstrong has said, well, it's easier to, or it's a lot of times better to start a kind of one of those first-year pros in the AHL and then bring him up later into the NHL versus the other way around, where you make the roster out of camp and then you have the disappointment of being sent down. You have the adjustment period of AHL hockey. You lose some time with your development down there, and then suddenly you have to kind of start over in Springfield after the disappointment, after the new role that you'll have being sent down to Springfield. So I don't get the impression that, I mean, obviously training camp can change a lot of things, but it would have to be one heck of a camp for Dvorsky to make that much of an impression to make the roster out of training camp. And It sounds like the Blues want to be a little bit more patient with him. I mean, he's only 19 years old. A lot of players in his position like aren't playing in the AHL at 19. He'll be one of the younger players in the league if he is there. The Blues also technically have the option to send him back to the OHL, but I don't know what else there is for him to do there. So it is easy to forget that he is only 19 years old. There will be some bumps along the way, and going to Springfield could be the best way to work those out. But every moment we talk to Doug about Dvorsky, I think he wants to say, yeah, I mean, we're going to take it slow and put him in Springfield, but he doesn't want to crush the motivation or desire that Dvorsky has to make the NHL roster. And if you say you're starting out in Springfield, well, I don't know what else, what motivation there is to prove that you can make your way to the NHL roster. So that's where kind of where I'm at heading into camp, thinking that the default will be the AHL, and he'll have to prove his way out of that.
Yeah, I think fans need to remember and just how difficult it is for first-year pros to make a mark in the A, and particularly as you mentioned, a younger guy like Dvorsky. But certainly last year it took Zach Dean a while to settle in, and really not till toward the end of the season was he really starting to make an overall mark. Bolduc had the same sort of challenge. He had to learn how to everything about the pro game. Eventually got there and finished the year on a good note, and really has shown well in the NHL during his time there. So, but fans need to remember, if Dvorsky goes to the A and doesn't light it up immediately, they have to remember that very few young players, first-year players, put up numbers in that league. It's some guys do, but it's only the truly elite prospects.
Yeah, it's not a development's not a straight line, right? That's the old saying, and it's different for every player. But when I look at honestly, last year's AHL MVP was Maverick Bork with the Texas Stars, and his guy I covered when he was drafted by Dallas a few years ago. Last year he had, I think, I'm looking it up right now, 77 points in 71 games, but that was his second season in the AHL. Like his first year pro was, 47 points in 70 games, so a little bit over the half point per game barrier. But it wasn't. He's a former first round pick, first year pro. You have those expectations, and he's used to performing honestly at like a 2 point per game pace. And when he's playing in Quebec, and suddenly you're not there. And this next year comes out, wins league MVP. So it is worth remembering that it's not always so simple. And I think the other part is Dvorsky will be one of the youngest players in the AHL if he does end up there.
Now let's talk about the forward group because it is an interesting bunch with the population group of guys in their 20s increasing with the additions that Doug Armstrong made. First up, once again, and I don't know. I mean, I have a hard time with this one. Pavel Buchnevich playing center. I mean, Pavel, this guy's a hockey player. He's smart. He makes teammates better. He does everything well. He understands. I mean, he just positionally instincts. His way he handles himself on the ice, his shift to shift consistency, all of that's there. Obviously learning to take faceoffs is not a strong suit. You can work around that depending on who your line mate is. Your thoughts on, once again, that experiment likely to unfold as they try to balance up the first two lines.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings. I think in terms of overall hockey players, I mean, he's second behind Robert Thomas on the team, and if you can put your two best players at 1C and 2C, I think that's good depth down the middle, right? But you know what you have out of Buchnevich as a winger. That's where he's made his career. That's honestly how he made his money, and that's why you're paying him starting next year, the 6 year contract at 8 mil. So that's where you know that he's good. I probably would have liked to have seen the Blues start with a loaded top line with Buchnevich, Thomas, Kyrou, and see if the depth can kind of get going underneath them, because we know that top line, when they're going, can be one of the best ones in the league. They're one of the biggest difference makers in the league. We saw an extended period of time last year when Drew Bannister took over That was one of the things that he did, was to put those three back together and to just ride them. But, you know, then suddenly you're missing some depth on the second and third lines. So I would have preferred to see them start with that this year, see if the new depth that they require that they acquired could produce to start the year, and then make changes after that. But I can understand where they're coming from and say, well, we wanted to let him know earlier on in the offseason, in the summer, that this would be happening so he could prepare a little more, and then come into camp with a mindset that that is, you know, his job as the second line center instead of being, you know, top line winger. So I do understand it. I'm not sure it would have been the move that I would have made. And I think once they get going, I think Vucinovic likes the consistency and uniformity of having a defined role. You know, I know last year when I talked to him, he didn't like being center one game, winning another, center one shift, winning another. He wanted the consistency of how to knowing how to play and where to be at.
It's interesting to think about different options that they have. And we're all curious to see about Dylan Holloway. Now, this is he's going to have an the easiest time of several of these guys. And from the standpoint of his contract wasn't all that big, his offer sheet, you know, he was part of that the summer aggression by Doug Armstrong, but a pretty modest contract, a guy that can now step up from maybe 11 minutes a game to 14, maybe 15, physical guy. And that is, you know, a lot of his hits per minute and that part of his game is there. I'm just curious, you know, can he play center? You know, how much offense can he have? He was a guy in between injuries who did put up some numbers and stints in the AHL. So I'm kind of curious to see what happens with him.
Yeah, and when Doug Armstrong first talked about Holloway and after the successful offer sheets, he mentioned that Holloway has played center in the past and he hasn't played center really at all in the NHL. He said due to injury, but I think it's also partially due to the Oilers depth chart. They have better centers than Holloway could have been, right? And yeah, both him and Broberg are being paid over market value. That's just the reality of the way offer sheets work. If they're being paid at market value, then the offers would have been matched. Like that's the economics of it, right? So yes, they're both being overpaid for what they have shown in the last few years. And as you mentioned, you know, this is Holloway, who has actually played almost 90 NHL games, and he hasn't had a lot of production to show for it. I mean, he has 18 points in 89 games, but the 2.2 is not far from where he will play as in his role, right? If he's a middle six wing, that sort of dollar amount makes sense, regardless of his production in the past. And if he can produce up to that level now, with the speed and the bite and the forechecking that he does bring, the Blues will obviously love that. But it'll just be a wait and see moment. I think when we see Holloway and the game and the style that he brings, it would be interesting to see if him and Jake Neighbors would have some chemistry on a line together. They both are from the Calgary area, I believe. I think they knew each other a little bit growing up. I think they're in the same draft class, I want to say, 2020. And so that would be interesting and different games. I mean, Neighbors doesn't quite skate as well as Holloway does. And, you know, Neighbors does have a little bit more proven offense in him, but they both got some bite to them. And depending on who that center would be with them, it would be a tough line, I think, to go up against, or not a real fun one to play against. And I don't know if we're going to see that at the start of camp or at any point during the season, but when it does happen, I will be intrigued.
Yeah. What's the, is it the Calgary Hitmen that play there in the Western League?
That it is, but neither of them played there. You know, Holloway went to college at Wisconsin and Neighbors actually played for the Edmonton Oil Kings down the road or up the road.
But that could be the nickname though, because we could steal their,
there you go. Yeah. I wasn't thinking that way.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, but interesting that Doug Armstrong mentioned, this is no shock either, that as he tries to create the secondary leadership group, the subgroup behind those wearing a letter, that you know, it's time for Jake Neighbors to be part of that group. And that's not a surprise given the way he has played, the sort of character he has, and the natural leadership that he has shown in when he's played with players of his age.
Yeah, and quick news note, I mean, Doug Armstrong said that the leadership group will remain intact as far as the letters go. That means Captain Brady Chen and alternates Robert Thomas, Colton Pareko, and Justin Falk. And he mentioned a secondary leadership group that he wanted to take more of a role. And these are guys that don't wear letters, but will have a say in the vibe in the dressing room. And the two guys that he mentioned by name were Pavel Buchnevich and Jake Neighbors. And Neighbors has been a captain of his team in the past. You see the way he interacts with people, the way he treats people. And honestly, he's just an easy guy to talk to. And I think a lot of his teammates feel the same way. So he's a kind of a connector, right? And I think in the future, down the line, we will see a letter on him. Obviously it won't be this year, but this is kind of one of those first little steps to becoming more of a leader. And I think there are names that obviously Doug Armstrong did not mention in that secondary group that we would expect to be there. Guys like, you know, a Brandon Saad, who's been around for a while, a Nick Leddy in the secondary group, both quieter guys, but they've gone through a lot in their careers and they kind of know what's going on throughout the course of an NHL season. And, you know, even, yeah, I don't know how often Torrey Krug will be around, but I'm sure that he was being counted on in that secondary role in the past.
You mentioned earlier Broberg and his, of course, his outrageously generous offer sheet, which of course it was. But Doug Armstrong made the point of like, hey, you know, give it time. We're looking at the long game here. You know, we hope this guy will be around for a decade. You know, get a do well, get the next contract settled in, be part of the franchise. So it'll be interesting. I mean, we really, it's hard to have any expectation of what to realistically expect. Ideally, he becomes a top four guy and plays a lot of minutes and, you know, is useful in a shutdown role where there's a skating and his rangy, his reach and his ability to cover a lot of ice. But man, you talk about it, it's just going to be a process. And who knows how long it will take and what that process will look like early.
Yeah. And I think that was something that Doug Armstrong has also repeated throughout the summer since they got Broberg, was this is not going to be something that's going to be judged by Christmas. It's just not going to be a 3-month thing that you look at and say, all right, well, good move, bad move. Let's put it on the board and move on. He's going to be a little bit more of a project. I mean, this is a guy who spent most of last year in the AHL. Like, he came up and he played, I think those the last 10 games in the playoffs, but he wasn't counted on before that. And he is someone who they're not going to give a lot of power play responsibility early on. I don't know if he even projects long-term as a power play guy. His skill set doesn't seem to be that way. And his production on the power play in the AHL doesn't seem to be that he would be a power play guy in the NHL. But when you do have, you know, the draft status that he does have, the resources put into him that the Blues did put into him, not only in contract, but in draft pick compensation. You know, they not only gave up the second and the third for Broberg and Holloway and just straight up offer sheet compensation. They gave up an extra pick and an extra prospect to send to the Edmonton Oilers not to match. And they gave up a little extra capital to send to the Penguins in order to get back their own second round pick for next year. So they spent a lot of draft capital and a lot of real capital on these guys. And, you know, when I talked to Drew Bannister a week or two ago, you know, he was saying, well, Broberg's going to get a lot of opportunity at 5-on-5 and he's going to be on the penalty kill early, but we're not going to give him power play time just because that's going to be a lot. We don't want to put too much pressure on himself. And he's already probably going to be feeling a lot of pressure because of the circumstances surrounding his arrival. So he's got a lot going on, right? And I think when you look at the price tag that they paid for him, the Blues don't really care what the number is up to a point, right? They paid the maximum they could without going to the next threshold of draft pick compensation. And they still have cap space to use, right? Like, even with Torrey Krug counted against the cap and Sundqvist counted against the cap, like they still could have a full 23-man roster. Even if those two guys aren't playing, they wouldn't have to use LTIR. They would still have some flexibility underneath the salary cap. And before they made these moves, the salary cap flexibility isn't something that the Blues had a lot of, right? I think that we all scratched our heads when they paid the Penguins to take on Kevin Hayes and say, well, what are you doing giving up a future asset to get rid of someone right now? And what are you going to even do with that cap space? And they ended up using it in this way instead of maybe, you know, retaining salary at the trade deadline and getting a late round pick. They decided to, in a way, buy a older draft pick with an inflated cap hit.
All right, last topic here on the net front. I want to do two more quickly. You mentioned power play. No Torrey Krug. Justin Faulk coming back from injury will be a very important part of that mix this year. It'll have to be. Scott Perunovich, he still exists, right?
I believe so. Yeah, I believe so.
So he had a summer of reflection. He's got a. This is the last call for Scott in terms of this franchise, I assume. This is his chance. And he's got to have the whole game, right? And he's not a kid anymore.
Yeah, and I think when you're looking at pure power play options, he's one of the top two, and maybe even first on that list of defensemen. I mean, pure power play running ability. But in order to be on the power play, you got to be in the game, right? And I don't know right now if you look at him and say that he's one of the top six guys that they have on the back end. You know, if you look at maybe Letty with Parayko, Broberg and Faulk, Suter and Kessel, and then you have Perunovic, P.O. Joseph, Tyler Tucker underneath that. I don't know if Perunovic is able to get his way in there consistently, and that's what I'll have to prove during camp, right? Have to be part of that six in order to be part of the power play. I can't see a scenario with the forward depth that the Blues added wanting to willingly go 11-7 for periods of the season. I don't know if that makes sense to them and what they've done in the summer and just to limit their forward depth. But, you know, Perunovic makes sense running the power play. Faulk does, you know, Letty, Suter, Parayko have all done it in the past. Broberg, as we mentioned, has done it in the AHL, but doesn't expect to see that. I mean, it's they got a lot of options. They just don't have a lot of pure bona fide options, except Perunovic if he does put together the rest of his game and he's able to crack the lineup for sure.
All right, last thing before we let you get off to training camp. The one thing, one area where there's really no mystery is in goal. Jordan Bennington's coming off a very good year. Joel Hofer had a very good year. Joel wants to play more. Bennington likes being a true number one. Good situation. Now you look around the Western Conference, Thatcher Demko's got a knee injury with Vancouver. I'm not sure about when he'll play. LA likes Darcy Kemper, had Darcy Kemper, but they've got to revive Darcy Kemper. Minnesota, Gustafson and Fleury both played poorly. Wallstedt's their future. They could have all three guys on the team to start the year. So there is a bit of uncertainty around the NHL on this side of the league and Swayman being unsigned in Boston. But no uncertainty in goal for the Blues. Of all the things that you could look at this in camp, there is no mystery in goal.
Right, yeah. They know what they have there, and it's up to them to replicate what they did last year. You know, I think we've seen enough hockey year to year to know that goaltending is not always stable from a performance standpoint year over year. I mean, just looking last year, Vasilevsky had the worst year of his career. Saros had the worst year of his career. Jake Ottinger took a big step back. You know, Linus Ullmark was never a Vezina caliber contender until he was, right? These things tend to come and go. And, you know, Bobrovsky lost his starting job before he won the cup last year. Like these are, goaltending is not reliable year over year always. And the years that Bennington and Hofer had last year, legitimately a top five tandem in the league. I think they were underappreciated across the entire league because of where the Blues were in the standings. But when you look at the advanced numbers and their goals saved above expected, basically the saves they made against the quality chances that were presented to them, they were up there with Boston, and Florida, Winnipeg, the Rangers, like all those teams where, okay, well, that team had a Vezina trophy winner. That team won the cup. That team was the President's Trophy winner. That team won the President's Trophy and had the Vezina the year before. Like, these are elite goaltending teams, and the Blues were right up there with them. So if they're able to do that again and cover up as many mistakes as they did last year, except maybe the Blues are making fewer ones in front of them, the Blues will be in good shape. My concern is that the roster is better than it was last year. They'll play better, they'll skate better, they'll defend better. But if the goalies take a tiny step back towards merely above average instead of elite, then I worry what the results end up looking like in the standings and if it's all that different. I think the marginal increases on the roster will make a difference, but how much of a difference can they make up for if, you know, if the goalie tandem is at 908 instead of 911 or 913 or whatever they were at last year?
And I really think the rest of the conference is going to have a more competitive depth. There were some teams that took a step back or just were flat out tanking last year. There's going to be more depth, more hard nights on this side of the league as well. So fun season ahead. We'll have a lot to talk about here on the net front. I just want to remind you as we sign off that we have a lot of cool videos and a lot of cool podcasts, a lot of extra content on stltoday.com, the digital version of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Make sure that you're checking all of that stuff out with your phone app, off your desktop. A lot of cool stuff in addition to our print edition. For Matt DeFranks, I'm Jeff Gordon. Until next time, from the net front, see ya.